Israel, Turkey, South Africa, Canada.
Over the course of his career, filmmaker Chuck Kwan has traveled the world.
Cuba, India, Brazil, Argentina, Peru.
Chuck is a man on a mission, a truly delicious mission, to document the global Chinese diaspora all through its many Chinese restaurants. And on his travels, there's a question that he hears a lot.
Have you eaten yet? Have you eaten yet? It's a kind of traditional Chinese greeting, meaning, how are you? Asking if somebody's stomach is full is like asking, are you well?
Have You Eaten Yet is now also the title of Chuck's new book. It is part travelogue, part memoir, and it takes us behind the scenes of a documentary project Chuck has been working on for years, traveling to Chinese restaurants in 15 countries all around the world. So today, on Atlas Obscura, Chuck Kwan takes us on a round-the-world meal. We'll have three courses in three incredible places with three stories of Chinese immigration. I'm Dylan Thuris, your host, and I am hungry. Our first course, after this. If you're looking for a place where the wide open skies and the towering mountains inspire you to find an untapped part of yourself, you might want to take a trip to Wyoming. It's a place where bold, curious spirits forge their own way on all types of adventures. There is no shortage of iconic, expansive landscapes out there. You can discover breathtaking hikes, stunning state parks, authentic Western culture, and other historic sites, along with the tales of famous outlaws like Butch Cassidy and pioneers like Buffalo Bill Cody. The truth lies west. Discover yours at travelwyoming.com.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Filmmaker Chuck Kwan is a cosmopolitan kind of guy. He calls himself a card-carrying member of the Chinese diaspora. He was born in Hong Kong, he grew up in Singapore and Japan, and he studied in the U.S. Today, Chuck lives in Toronto, Canada. And to get a small taste of his odyssey tracking Chinese restaurants all around the world, we are going to have a three-course meal curated by Chuck. And it begins surprisingly close to his home. So I think we're going to start in your backyard in Saskatchewan. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about the New Alec Cafe.
It's 2 hours from another big city, Saskatoon. You know, big sky, wheat fields. And the town was about 1,200 people with a main street that has no stoplights. On the main street, right across from a car dealer, is New Alec Cafe. And this is a very typical Chinese cafe. You know, you have coffee, hash brown, sunny side up, bacon, pork chops, apple pie. And then, of course, chop suey and egg foo young and, you know, your traditional Chinese-American staples.
The New Alec Cafe, where was this in the sequence of visiting Chinese restaurants for this project?
Actually, it was my first trip, first shoot. I thought, well, this is my home country, and the little cafe in the small town in the prairies is exactly the kind of story that I would like to tell, not just because of the location, but because of how Noisy Jim came to Canada as a 13-year-old boy. Why he's called Noisy Jim is because he was noisy. You know, Jim was kind of his paper name. His real name was not Jim.
Noisy Jim is what's known in Canada as a paper son. In 1923, Canada passed a law which banned Chinese immigrants from entering the country, and the United States had a similar law. But many people found ways around this. One was buying a birth certificate or papers of a Chinese person already in Canada who had died.
He got on the boat, came all the way to Vancouver and took the train all the way to Saskatchewan to be with his paper father, somebody who had sponsored him. Of course, that paper father meant the father, quote unquote, had a son that he lost. So he gave the birth certificate of his son to Noisy Jim. He came in as a 13-year-old and then became a Canadian, of course, and then, you know, lived happily ever after.
Noisy Jim ran the New Outlook Cafe for over 40 years. And Chuck told us that over time, it became a lot more than just a cafe. And the small town of Outlook was almost like the unofficial town hall.
The restaurant became a like social center, you know. Some of the customers have keys to the restaurant, so they would come in and open it in case the gym is late. They would make their own breakfast, leave the money in the counter, and then go. And then late at night, the teenagers would come in after a movie, and they hang out. So he became so popular in town that they wanted him to run for mayor. He said, no, I don't want to run this. I don't want to get involved in politics. He had been running the restaurant for more than 40 years before he died, a year after I interviewed him. So he was so well-liked that when he passed away, they held a funeral at a hockey arena. Almost half the town were there to see him go.
This is a place that combines Canadian and Chinese heritage. What did the New Outlook Cafe, like, what did it tell you, this little restaurant in this small town with this sort of diehard community support?
Superficially, the story is that there's a Chinese restaurant everywhere. And that's a starting point, actually, of my journey, was that I wanted to look for Chinese restaurants around the world. A Chinese restaurant or a Chinese cafe is the easiest way for an immigrant to get a new life in a new country. He doesn't have to speak the language, doesn't have to know how to cook. Chinese food is in such a way that it's so popular that you can fool a lot of people a lot of times with, you know, your own Chinese food. It's a nice vehicle to survive.
What is our first course at New Outlook? What is the meal that's like emblematic of that place and that kind of Chinese restaurant?
I would say breakfast at the New Outlook Cafe. A cup of coffee and bacon and eggs. You know, we're having Chinese Canadian food.
Chuck went to some fairly far-flung places for his food journey. And he wanted to take us to one. So for our second course, Chuck is bringing us to Madagascar, specifically the port city of Tamatov, also known as Toamasina.
Now, I want to say something. Before I made this movie or wrote this book, I never knew there were Chinese in Madagascar. I never knew that until I got there and I found out that there were five generations of Chinese who have settled in Madagascar. They were brought in by the French colonial government to build railroads, for example, and to run farms, to do all kinds of labor, sometimes indentured laborers in Madagascar.
And so for lunch, Chuck is taking us to a spot called Restaurant Le Jad, run by a chef named Mide Chan.
Mide is a fabulous woman who had never been to China or Hong Kong. And yet she speaks a very fluent Cantonese and she cooks one of the best meals that I've ever had. She ran a seafood place, so it was like fantastic, freshest seafood, lobster, oysters, garupa, everything that you can get from the Indian Ocean two blocks away. A steamed garupa with ginger and scallion. That's one of my favorite comfort food. The whole fish being steamed and then pour over with soy sauce and oil and, you know, scallion and ginger. So that would be my lunch. As your second course.
I like that. Sounds delicious. I mean, so one of the questions this raises for me is, you know, you're talking about generations of five generations of the Chinese diaspora in Madagascar. Can you tell me a little bit about sort of what the community in Madagascar is like? What is kind of the experience of the Chinese in Madagascar that you saw?
Imagine five generations of a lot of men who came here as indentured laborers. They would marry local women. So in that sense, a majority of the people, so-called Chinese Malagasies, are in fact mixed with the local Malagasies and sometimes French. But what's amazing that I found out was that a lot of them speak perfect Cantonese, because for many years, the community had built Chinese schools in Madagascar all over the place so that they can preserve their Chinese culture. So a third generation chef like Mide, she has never been outside of Madagascar, and yet she speaks perfect, she writes, and she even teaches Chinese in the local Chinese school before she opened the restaurant. The second amazing phenomenon was, of course, the national dish of Madagascar is called soup chinoise, which is Chinese soup. It's basically wonton soup. Everybody has it, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So, you know, one of my courses would be wonton soup for your lunch. It's amazing.
Let's go on to our third location, our third course. And this is an interesting one because it sort of brings you through time a little bit.
In 1976, I was traveling through Turkey. I looked up the guidebook, and the guidebook said that the only Chinese restaurant in Istanbul is called China Restaurant, and the owner had walked from China. So I was very curious, how did he walk from China? I just have a little sidebar on this thing. I actually had dinner and drinks with a French Vietnamese man, and he turned out to be a serial killer.
Whoa. Wait, so you're saying it's 1976, you're in Istanbul, you go to this Chinese restaurant, and then you meet like another traveler.
Right.
And you go out for drinks.
Right. And he turned around and he said, look, you know, I could have drugged you because of this and that. And I'm wanted by the Interpol. I just escaped from a French prison. I'm hiding in Istanbul right now. And for many years, I thought, wow, who's this guy, you know? To cut a long story short, have you watched the Netflix series called The Serpent?
No, I'm aware of it, though. Yeah.
It's this guy. So that's a sidebar.
Yeah, that's a wild story.
It's a good thing Chuck was not murdered, for lots of reasons, but one of which is that we would not be able to take this trip with him. So back to the restaurant then. The place from the guidebook called China Restaurant.
So fast forward to 2001. So that's 25 years later, and I finally found out the entire story of how the man had walked from China. It turned out that he was from a Muslim family, and his whole family escaped Mao Zedong, flee China during the 1949 Communist Revolution. And they were actually Northwest China. They were posted in Xinjiang, which is where the Uyghurs are. And so instead of following the rest of the nationalist China go to Taiwan, they went across the Himalayas on horseback, on donkeys, and walking partway. It's a 3-week journey, 3 or 4 weeks journey into Pakistan. And from Pakistan, they migrated to Turkey, and he grew his family there from the 50s. I really enjoy the dumplings in this place. Of course, dumplings are, in Chinese culinary scene, are usually made with pork. But this place, of course, do not allow pork, so they use beef. They're the beef dumplings. And they have done it pan-fried, you know, in soup, and also mutton dumplings. So that would be my third course.
Yeah, mutton dumplings sound delicious. It sounds great.
Yeah, it is. It is very, if you like mutton, then mutton dumplings is like heaven.
This is maybe a silly question, but is there something distinctive about Chinese food that makes it sort of so adaptable and gives it such a global appeal and flexibility?
I'm also questioning this myself. Like, I, you know, the obvious answer was that, you know, a lot of people used to walk to cook the food. And with the walk, you can put any kind of things in there. Huh. Stir fry together, and it could be a hybrid. Doesn't have to be what the recipe calls for. I think it has to do with the inventiveness of the people in the kitchen. And I would trace it back to a human factor, that people, to survive, you have to cater to what your customers want.
I'm from the Midwest, so we're obviously a big dairy
centric diet, and I'm from Minnesota. So cream cheese wontons are like a very classic Chinese thing. So it's wontons just filled with cream cheese. Yeah.
Well, you'll wind up on me on inventive Chinese food. This is amazing. I never heard of that.
Oh, really?
No, in fact, no, no. This is like too far out for me.
Chuck, thank you for all the time. This has been really an amazing conversation. I appreciate you taking us through these places and the dishes, and congratulations on the book. It's been just great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Chuck Kwan's new book is called Have You Eaten Yet? And you can check out his documentary series that started it all. It's called Chinese Restaurants, and every episode is up on YouTube. We'll link it in our episode description. Our podcast is a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Stitcher Studios. This episode was produced by
Amanda McGowan.
The production team includes
Doug Baldinger,
Chris Naka,
Camille Stanley,
Manolo Morales,
Baudelaire Seuss,
Gabby Gladney.
Our technical director is
Casey Holford.
This episode was mixed by
Luce Fleming.
If you want to learn more, be sure to visit atlasobscura.com. There is a link in the episode description. Our theme and end credit music is by Sam Tyndall, and I'm Dylan Thuris, wishing you all the wonder in the world. I'll see you next time.
Hi, I'm Willa Paskin, the host of Decoder Ring, Slate's podcast about cracking cultural mysteries. On Decoder Ring, we dive down rabbit holes and obsessively explore questions hiding in plain sight. Like, why has slow dancing gone out of style? And when did we all become obsessed with hydration? And where did the word mullet, you know, to describe a hairstyle, come from? That's Decoder Ring, named one of the best podcasts of 2023 by the New York Times. Listen to new episodes every 2 weeks and make sure to follow us so you never miss one.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.